Until recently, it was rare to see an Austrian wine on a restaurant wine list or in a wine shop. And now suddenly, Grüner Veltliners are everywhere as the affordable dry white wines that seem to go with everything. And we're seeing more and more reds along with world-class Riesling. So what happened? Well, joining me now is Aldo Somm, the sommelier and wine director at New York's celebrated Le Bernardin restaurant. He was named Best Sommelier in the World 2008, the first ever representative from the United States to take that title. Welcome to our show.
Hello, good afternoon.
Now, you work at a French restaurant, but weren't you born and raised in Austria?
That's correct.
And do you recommend Austrian films when people are at Le Bernardin?
Well, obviously my main focus is on French wine. It's a French restaurant, that's without a doubt. But you'll be surprised how many people ask me lately about Austrian wine.
Well, you won the Best Sommelier in Austria competition four times before you moved to New York. I would assume there you were concentrating on the wines of Austria.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I grew up with them. On the other hand, it's still a very, very interesting development to see, especially in New York City, even people who don't know me at all ask me for Austrian wine. Even with my sommeliers, they ask them too, you know.
Well, what's happened? Why were Austrian wines pretty much unavailable for so many years? Robert Parker, I know, 10 years ago said that their wine labels are terribly confusing, but are they as confusing as German wine labels?
Maybe not as much. The labeling terms became a little bit more straightforward, without a question. But still, you know, you're dealing with a foreign language, so it's always more difficult.
Yeah, but we don't have that problem with French or Spanish or Italian.
Well, but, you know, there's a major French influence here in New York, and it's a little bit more difficult. No, but I think Grüner Veltliner is especially, you know, broke the ice here with the American market 10 years ago. And ever since, it's kind of it's very, very established.
Well, let's deal with the big problem for Austrian wines. It was said once that 4,000 years of winemaking history were wiped out by one scandal, the antifreeze scandal of 1985. What happened with that?
Well, you know, a couple of big corps cheated wine. They made, in that time, you know, the time was very different. People were used to drink, you know, inexpensive, cheap table wine. It has to be sweet. They want to have three bottles, you know, two people, three bottles a night, and spend very little money on that. And, you know, they cheated that wine, which was a terrible action. But in the same time, from today's perspective, it wiped out everything.
Well, they were adding diethylene glycol, which goes into antifreeze, but I gather in amounts that really didn't present any health dangers. And they probably would have gotten away with it if one of them tried to claim the cost of the chemical on his tax return.
Well, a German scientist actually found out about that, which is actually, it was at that time, you know, dramatic for many winemakers which didn't cheat at all because they disappeared from the shelves. But at the same time, don't forget, Italy had a major wine scandal with several deaths. And, you know, Italians had a little bit more experience how to work scandals out.
Well, it's been said that in a way that the scandal was the savior of the industry in Austria because strict new regulations were put into place, and the wines these days, on the whole, are a lot better than they used to be.
Oh, way better.
Everybody felt that they had to improve.
Yeah. And the market asked for that too. Even Austrians suddenly changed their drinking habit, you know, spent the same amount of money what they had done before on the three bottles, spent on one, and that totally dry and quality. And winemakers went that way, which was good from today.
But why have we suddenly seen this change here? It's one thing to improve the quality of the wines, but Austria is still a small wine producer comparatively. And suddenly now you see these Grüner Veltliners everywhere.
Well, I mean, Austria produces 1% of the world wine production, so it's very, very small. On top of it, Austria exports only 15% of its own production into the world. Major market is Germany, believe it or not, which sounds bizarre, followed by Switzerland, and then number three is then already America.
And Grüner Veltliner is only grown in Austria?
No, you'll find some interesting Veltliners in the Czech Republic, Slovenia, a little bit in Hungary, but, you know, when you taste those wines and you compare them with Austrian Grüner Veltliners, you'll see, you know, they have no competition there because it's in Austria, it's very straightforward, very, very clean, and it represents Grüner Veltliner probably the best.
It's for many people, it's an alternative to Sauvignon Blanc. Because it goes with so many different things in the same way, a very dry white wine.
Almost more versatile than a Sauvignon Blanc. That's actually, I think, one of the major reasons why it's so successful in New York is, I mean, New Yorkers are foodies, that's with no question. So, and you have so many different cultural influences, you know, and especially Grüner Veltliner, also the dry Rieslings, which Austrian Rieslings are always dry. They tend to go with that type of cuisines, you know, with that major different influence very, very well. And they have a hard time to find normally wine which goes, a type of wine which goes with almost every cuisine.
My guest is was chosen the best sommelier in the world, 2008. It's hard for me to believe that he went through all of the torturous tests he went through to get to that, but we'll talk about that in a moment. His name is Aldo Somme. He is currently the sommelier and wine director at Le Bernardin here in New York, but also obviously somebody who's very proud of the wines of his home country. So you say in the whites, Grüner Veltliner, there's a, what do they call them, Welsh Riesling?
Welsh Riesling, yeah.
And they're ancient wines. So they've been grown there since at least Roman times.
Absolutely, even longer. Even longer. But we do also produce also Sauvignon Blancs, which you mentioned before, in a very different way. It's not as aggressive or as fruit-driven as a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc will be, and it's not as tart as a Sancerre. So it's a perfect, again, food-matching wine.
Again, you
especially
say,
from Styria, those.
And are you convincing Eric Ripert that you could just get a lot of those wines in there? Because so many people eat fish at that restaurant, and that means they probably will be ordering white wines.
I mean, yeah, we focus. I mean, I focus very strong on white wines, with no question, especially with the raw dishes. But on the other hand, is they match extremely well also with the warm appetizers, and that's the beautiful part on it. But again, I'm very, very careful since my Austrian heritage that I'm not focusing too extreme on Austrian wine. Again, my passion is also about French wine, that's with no question.
The red wines are similar to the German red wines?
No. German red wines tend to, I mean, they focus mainly, which you can taste here, Spätburgunder, which is a clone of Pinot Noir. We do have Pinot Noirs too, but I think more interesting examples you get from the indigenous variety St. Laurent, which is perhaps has a little bit more fruit concentration than a Pinot. Then you get especially Zweigelt, a varietal which brings very smooth, very, very elegant wines and very drinkable wines too.
Do the Germans know that you constantly find Austrian wines better than German wines?
actually, I'm a very... One thing I stopped in New York is thinking about nationalities. it doesn't matter, except it has to be good, you know. That's what actually New Yorkers care for.
A listener from the Upper West Side wants to know about a wine called Grinzing from outside Vienna. He says it's been several years and he hasn't been able to find it here.
Well, it's, you know, given the American liquor law, it's very, very challenging, which is for us Europeans kind of crazy. But Grinzing is a little village which belongs to Vienna. And there's right now development from Gewichter Satz, and you should get wines here. Actually, you get one from, which is from Stammersdom, Fritz Wieninger, just close by. You get Grüner Veltliners there, or Gewichter Satz.
Uh-huh. So it would be a Grüner Veltliner that he had in Grinzing?
Pretty much. Or a Gewichter Satz, which is a field blend, a very typical Viennese way of making wine.
Tell us about the Best Sommelier in the World competition. What did you have to do to win?
It's fairly complex. It's a written exam about wine growing, wine laws, vineyards, then winemaking all over the world, meaning beginning in Japan, ending up in South America. Then it also includes liquor, beer, tea, coffee, cigars. Then you have to go through a blind tastings, written. We have to, you know, describe the color, the nose, the palate, make a quality conclusion, food and wine pairing, and come as close as possible to grape variety, vintage, and area. Then...
There are some people who've taken tests, blind testings, where they've been given red and white wines and they couldn't tell the difference.
Well, that's when you're doing black glasses. I train with black glasses too, especially with liquor. And with liquor, you'll be surprised. I just judged last year the Best Sommelier in America competition. And I set for the competitors up a black glass and put in Campari. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's amazingly difficult when you don't see the color. Because with red, you know, you see Campari, everybody will notice, okay, it's Campari. That's fairly easy. But when you just smell on it, you'll be surprised how difficult
it is.
So how
do you do it? You just have a better palate than I do?
It's constantly training, you know, a taste. I train constantly the flavors.
And you mentioned you also have to know about coffees, teas, beers, and cigars.
Yeah, that's what's the most difficult part
for
me.
What happens if you don't smoke cigars?
I had to start.
Because otherwise, you have to smoke a cigar to win the contest.
Well, that's a minor point, but, you know, you want to score as much as you can.
They also ask you to correct an intentionally faulty wine list. What would that be?
What would that be? For instance, I'm making an easy example. It's Chambord Musigny, Red Burgundy village, and they put there from the Vignette La Tâche, which is not correct. It's not produced in that village. It's Voromani. You have to correct that. They mix up white wines into red wines. Then they make wines on the list which weren't produced that year. Things like that. So you have to correct that. Or making mistakes in terms of the villages, quality terms.
Is the Austrian wine industry doing things to introduce Americans to these wines that are not available in every wine store? I suspect they're still not in all the local stores.
Well, there's actually in 2 days in Tribeca Rooftop a huge Austrian wine event, Austria Uncorked, where over 100 wineries come to New York and represent the wines. So I think Austria is there fairly aggressive when it comes on that, and they're very eager to showcase their wine. They're very proud, too.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of the wines don't wind up being exported, and that is always something that surprises Americans. They'll go to France or Italy or Germany or Austria, have a fabulous wine, come back here and discover that they can't get it because all of them are sold sold nearby.
Yeah, but we have that problem pretty much everywhere. You know, the best wines very often stay in the country, even with French wine. It's a little bit better distributed there, but it will take time, but it will come.
And meanwhile, you're at Le Bernardin.
Yeah.
You probably know about every possible pairing of a wine with fish.
Yeah, not only one, more.
What happens when the chef Eric Repair changes the menu? You have to start thinking all over again.
I'm getting wrinkles on my forehead. But we'll make it work.
I see. Well, meanwhile, you have this event, as you said, hosting an Austrian wine tasting this Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Tribeca Rooftop at 2 DeBrosa Street. And can anybody go?
Everybody can go. They make a couple chefs there who produce also some food. So I think, and you can taste especially, how versatile Austrian wine is, even with food. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, for me, the major part. You know, wine and food belong always together.
Now, you mentioned that there are only dry Rieslings. Riesling is this wonderful grape that can be a million different things. When people hear the word Riesling, especially when they think of German Rieslings, they only think sweet.
Yeah.
Although there are really wonderful dry Rieslings from Germany as well. What are Austrian, you said Austrian Rieslings are different?
Well, Austrian wine, especially white wine, is mostly dry-based. It's like the Austrian sense of humor. It's also a little bit more on the drier side.
Does it go with the Austrian cuisine?
Absolutely.
You have worked at any number of restaurants that were Austrian.
Absolutely. No, it goes extremely well. But the difference, Austrian Riesling is always dry. We produce it dry, in a dry version, unless we go into dessert wines, but it's a whole different category.
I've always wondered why that grape could be so different when it's grown in different places in a way that others, all grapes are different in where they're grown, but Riesling more than any.
I think I'm a big Riesling fan, with no question, and I've pushed it also. I have to admit, because it's the most misunderstood varietal, and certainly right now also one of the most undervalued varietals, because even German ones, and German wines tend to go right now also more in the drier direction, because they see the success from Austria. That's a clear sign.
And from the Alsace.
Yeah, that too. And you get great German Rieslings, which are dry-based. The problem is still here. It triggers in people. Riesling is triggered sweetness. Many California Chardonnays have the same residual sugar level than Riesling, if not lower.
Aldo Sum, as I said, will be hosting an Austrian wine tasting this Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Tribeca Rooftop at 2 DeBrosa Street. For more information and All sorts of information about tickets. You can visit our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.